This is RSVMP Update, episode 624, recorded Thursday, June 22nd, 2017, The Dungeoneering Connection. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSVMP Update this week. Tanis is here, as he has been for the past few weeks. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And also joining us this week is Sirion to offer us his opinion, his humble opinion on Metaphos and various aspects of it from, I guess you could say, maybe a game designer perspective, depending. Or maybe just
maybe.
Maybe just a senior player perspective.
Yeah, or max player.
Yeah.
Or somebody who just finished the arc before Metaphos.
And now he's really salty.
quite.
Okay. Well, we also have this week Fight Club, the final quest of the Metaphos series. I, as I mentioned last week, have sacrificed and got all the wrap up and have this ready for you guys to discuss this week, so I'll do that. But first and foremost, this week we had a bit of a surprise update in that we were expecting the Magister bridge boss to arrive, but instead we get the Aiding the Exile Metaphos community event. There ain't much to discuss here about this event. It is pretty much exactly like all of the other community events we've seen in the past. You do stuff in RuneScape, and in this case, Metaphos, and you get coins to unlock cosmetics. Just like the Build-A-Fair event, Port Serum event, I could go on and on and on, but you guys get the idea by this point,
on,
I think.
And on and on and on.
I stopped reading after like 5 words.
Yeah. There's only 2 real interesting things about this. You only get the coins when you're inside Metaphos.
Or the Slayer Dungeon.
Or the Slayer Dungeon. And, unlike previous events, there's no limit of 1K coins per day.
So that limit was actually removed after the initial announcement.
Yeah, that was,
as far
that was
as I understood.
That's right. That was a little bit odd. And, you know, I think it's interesting, because normally that is what Jagex uses to drive people towards the microtransaction side of the event. But in this case, I think it's being used to encourage people to spend time in Metaphos if they're gaining their rep up, or if they have completed their rep, they can come back for some cosmetics and the like. And, you know, I think this is playing into what I said we were going to see. You know, we're 3 weeks into Metaphos right now, and I think that we're at the point where people are completing their reputation, completing what they want to complete in the city, and moving on from it. So if you think that this would have been out next week for the 4th week of Metaphos, that would have been right on as coming up to the near-month limit of this. So obviously this was going to be in place to encourage people to stay in Metaphos, which underlines the aspect of the city that we have outlined from the very beginning. So
I think it's quite interesting how Jagex, I'm still don't really understand what moved Jagex's decision to remove the limit, right? And I'm sort of curious to your opinion on that. But first of all, with the limit removed, and I looked through the rewards today, and they're actually not as bad as they used to be in previous events. This is sort of the best iteration of this event so far. Because, especially myself, like with a full-time job, my playtime is very irregular. Like, I can usually log in for at least 5 minutes every day to like check Treasure Hunter, maybe do a daily. But the bulk of the game time lies in the weekends. And now I can sort of grind through the entire weekend if I want to get all these rewards. So it feels way more fair in that respect. And
right,
also
that is
the rewards seem to be like, last time there were not even any mystery boxes on the rewards. They were just cosmetic. So I didn't bother. This time there seems to be mystery boxes, some really cool rewards at the end, like a teleport animation and a vesting animation.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know what the other things are, the relics. Are they reputation, maybe? I don't know what they are exactly, but like everything looks a lot more interesting. So the whole event, it sort of makes sense as part of the Menopause event. But like, I am still not entirely sure why initially there was a 1K limit on daily coins, and now there is no longer a daily limit. Like, what moved Jagex into that direction?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
some say their heart grew 3 sizes that day as they watched everyone slave away menopause.
Because, you know, that's a huge increase on the limit, and maybe it's just to stimulate menopause. Maybe that's all there is to it.
Well, you would want people to return, right? Because the 1K limit sort of forces you to go there every day and cap it. Like, removing that doesn't really force people more into menopause, I feel. It forces people to maybe grind it early on and then sort of like leave menopause even earlier. So I'm not entirely sure what this, the point made there. It feels sort of weird. The argument they gave is because it's just in menopause we remove the limit, but I don't see why that one leads to the other. It's like, it's weird.
I agree. I can't think of any reason that they would want to do that. I mean, like, it gets people coming back daily, and I mean, unless there was a bulk of, you know, people who wanted to just do it all on the weekend, like you said, then that might be a reason. But still, why not do that for all the other ones like this as well? I think that'd be a really innovative thing to do for these kind of events.
Yeah. One, what I wonder about is there's been a lot of focus on keeping players in menopause, which I understand. There's a lot of development time and money that went into this. And for the most part, you know, I'm happy with it. But this was never built for high-level players. So why are we keep trying to get the higher-level players in here? It wasn't for them. It was never planned for us to be there. I mean, other than the Slayer.
Well, they want us there because if we're there, then we're, you know, taking advantage of the city and making it worthwhile. But if we're not there, they got this expansion that came out 3 weeks ago, and it's starting to empty out.
Well, but then that was a bad design choice to make it for mid-levels then. I mean, I think it was okay.
I think it was fine, too.
I think it's fine to design something for mid-level players, but if you want your player base, that, I mean, I guess it's generally high level. If you want them to spend time there, you need to offer something that is worthwhile. And right now, the only thing really worthwhile for high level players is probably the Slayer dungeon.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there would have been ways to deal with that. That would have been that would have made more sense, because I don't know how you get out of that paradox of this is a mid level hub, so it by its very nature can't have a lot for a higher level player to do. But the Slayer is one aspect of it, and if the Shifting Tombs had been more rewarding, which it should be, because it was billed as the risk reward part of skilling, if that was more rewarding, then we would have a reason. You'd have Slayer and you would have Shifting Tombs, and that would have been enough. But I think that's where the work should be going into if you want to get players there. Now, not this daily stuff, not this. You know, hey, I think a flying carpet teleport is going to be cool. I want it, but I'd rather you maybe done some balancing with Shifting Tombs.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the point, right? Like, you don't have to make things uniformly high level or uniformly mid level. Like, there's high level activities all throughout the world. Like, people still come down to Sovenham to do pyramid plunder. That's something for all levels, and it's like pretty good slayer thieving experience for like different levels. And like dungeon Demonheim is one of these places that you sort of get back to. Sinkholes is an activity that's accessible for all levels and worthwhile. Like, there's events that, or things in the game that are interesting for all levels to some degree. And you can add that to a city like this. You can have people go here for fun stuff. But like shifting tombs, like I don't know.
I get where you're coming from. I mean, they buffed it the second week, and I don't know if that was enough. But I mean, it's not going to be used.
No.
So,
no. And I think the example you use, Sirion, is pretty spot on. I mean, Sinkholes is a game that works. And
it
works for all levels. And if they had made Shifting Tombs more along those lines, yeah. I mean, that's a really good example, I think. I think that's the best one could have come
Shifting
up.
Tombs, also Big Chin is another one that is really popular still, which sort of also works for all levels. And then gives you reward points that most people will probably use on private hunting areas in the Gnome Tree stronghold, so it sort of also buffs that area up as like a place you would go to, gives it some use.
That's what we're missing in Menaphos.
Like, I think Gnome Tree stronghold is a great example because it's a fairly low level area, right? Like, it's the first agility course you can do.
And there's also the high level agility course.
There's also the high-level agility course. There's the private hunting area.
Farming.
There's a farming area you visit. There's some magic trees that might be interesting to you.
Intermediate questing.
Intermediate questing. There's the cooking event. There's so much stuff there. Like, you sort of can't get around to visiting it every now and then.
So the sense then is that Menaphos is one-dimensional and that's why we have this Aiding the Exile event here this week, is to bring people back, when in reality you have events in the Gnome Stronghold that accomplish that.
Exactly. And I think, say, the Gnome Tree Stronghold has this advantage that it sort of developed over time, like new things were added and had this time to sort of bake, if I can call it that. Well, Menaphos sort of was designed as a whole thing. And I think it's really difficult to sort of put lots of different things in. And instead, you just get it. Yeah. I think one-dimensional is a great description of that city.
Yeah. Now, I think we've covered the Exile event and why they're bringing people in. And I was talking with you, Sirion, pre-show, and we were saying that you had some questions about the release strategy that Jagex is employing with Menaphos. So what exactly is that?
Yeah, like how exactly? So when you look at the Ark, I think after the Ark, maybe even at Runefest, Jagex made clear that like the whole batching stuff, like it did with the Elf City, like it did with the Ark, that didn't work. And they were sort of saying that is not going to happen anymore. And then the Menaphos comes out, and I have the expectation that what we see is what we get, right?
Exactly.
Menaphos is there. That's what we're going to get. And that's what I'm going to judge it by. I judged it pretty quickly because there was not much to judge. And then, like, the Soul Obelisk started appearing. And there's the whole... and the Scorpions. And there's the boss coming up. And there's so much stuff happening. It almost feels like a world event. And I am not entirely sure where that come from, but this realization only came very recently. While it seems that Jagex sort of intended this to be a world event-like thing for a couple of weeks and never really communicated this. So the whole release strategy seems so weird and confusing to me. And then you get this event, sort of the Aiding the Exile event, sort of pushed in, which felt out of place, and it's one of these reused pieces of content. Like, we have seen this before. And then with the removal of the limit, it all feels a bit panicky, like they're trying to pull people back to Menaphos and be like, no, there's still more to see, please stay. and it doesn't show So it doesn't show trust in their own product, but also the fact that they had these events lined up doesn't really show trust beforehand. And I find this really problematic, and I have spent so much thought on trying to figure out what exactly is going on at Jagex headquarters, like what is their plan, and I am having trouble giving it a constructive, positive spin. Like, it just feels a bit panicky to just get people in the city, and it's confusing me as a player. Like, I am pretty good at following the news of RuneScape, and I'm utterly confused and baffled about what is going on, because there's so many in-game world events things happening, but they're never really posted in news posts, and I don't have much time to play, so I have to gather things from the community.
It's like continue.
Yeah, no, that's basically it. So I have to sort of gather it from the community, which is imperfect information.
It's basically like they said they were going to do it this year, 2017 be the year of surprises. And ultimately, I mean, is this the kind of surprises that you wanted, where the entire world events, Soul Obelisks and whatnot, aren't posted on the front page of the RuneScape website?
I mean, in a way, it's sort of interesting, right? It gives it a very mysterious spin. And if you announce everything ahead, I guess it would take away from the feeling. But also, the whole communication stopped working. Like, they said, we're going to release this in one batch, and then you do something else. And that's not what they said to do. And I found this the same issue with the luck rework, right? They say we're going to add four new tiers of truck. Look, and they add a fifth one. Like, that's not what surprises is. That's straight up lying to your community.
What the Hazelmere Signet Ring does. It gives you a chance of receiving double loot.
Yeah, like, I'm completely angry about that part, but, like, I'm not going to pull open that can of worms at the point. I'm over that. Like, that is my issue. Like, I am okay with surprises, but then don't make your communication strategy one big mess, because that's not a fun way of doing surprises.
And plus, like, it doesn't give players direction as well, because what are players supposed to do when they get to Menaphos?
So I did Soul Obelisks, right? And all of a sudden, it said, you feel a familiar presence, the Magister is fighting back. And I'm like, who the is the Magister? Who is it? To this point, I have no idea who the Magister is, except that he's fighting back when I try sapping my life on a Soul Obelisk. And the point is, there's no source to get this information from except for the community.
Yeah, the Magister wasn't in the quest.
And apparently, there's going to be a Magister boss in the Slayer dungeon.
Tanis, was there anything in the Slayer dungeon that pointed to the Magister aside from the keys?
Not that I have uncovered.
Are there any lore book drops in the Slayer dungeon?
I haven't gotten any yet. So okay. I don't believe. And I think you're both kind of coming to the crux of the problem. And let me defend Jagex just a little bit here. I think mainly the issue we're having, and I don't know how they could have done this better. It needed to be done better, but I'm not sure how you could have done it, because I don't think you can straddle this line. I don't think anybody can straddle this line, but they want it to be surprises. They wanted a sense of exploration. They wanted us to find all this stuff on our own. But yet, if we don't find it and people start getting bored and then they just leave, what do they do?
Yeah.
It's also not very inclusive, right? Because there are people who really go into the game and try to find out the secrets that have the time to do it.
I don't have
the time to do it. But I would love to be involved and know what's going on, but there's not really a good way for me to participate to find out. And are you sort of...
Maybe we need
really
to do more city quests.
That could be. I would be guilty of not doing any of them. But I just, I just think it's a hard situation when you want people to explore, but yet we really need to know everything that is there so that we can make a better decision on, you know, what we think. And that's just hard. Because like I said, a soul obelisk is a perfect example. Was that planned? Was that added? I don't know. And if I knew that, that could really change the way that I'm looking at things.
I think it would have had to have been planned because it came out a couple days after. And I don't think there was a server reboot to add additional things to it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good evidence. And having that been a part of the expansion, to me, that's a lot better.
But soul obelisks were only supposed to be temporary.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that that's sticking around. It's too good to take away. And as
Which
for
says
like
something about
yes, it does, it does, it does. Well, but you know, that is a balancing issue, and I fully anticipated there to be some balancing issues when it comes to content that's this big. Like that, I'm not as worried about. I don't know. I just feel like I think they've done better than what a lot of us have given credit really for.
Oh, and you know, by all means, Menaphos itself as a technical update went off without a hitch. There were no huge bugs. There were no big problems. It looks great. It works great mechanically. It's just an engagement problem, I think.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I agree with Hannah's here. Like, it's like Manifold is getting more interesting over time. But first of all, people were not expecting this. I think a lot of people sort of judged it by the cover, and Jarius didn't give any hint as to why we shouldn't have, because they didn't announce anything. I would have been fine if Jerry said, okay, we're going to release Manifold and there will be a few surprises. That doesn't give anything away. I think it doesn't remove anything from like the experience, but it also shows that things are coming and people don't immediately judge it and maybe rush through it to get it done. So I think, first of all, the communication could have been better. And second of all, I think there has to be a way to catch up, because people explore things over time, which is cool, but I come into the game after work and I have no idea what happened during the day and I want to be able to catch up. So
yeah.
I feel there should be some way, some official.
Definitely.
I mean, I could probably read this all on the wiki, right? If I really wanted to, but this should be in the game. I should be able to like figure out what happened while I was gone. And I think that is a big problem. Like, they're really catering to this hardcore part that's exploring right now, but not really to the players who maybe want to, but can't engage that much because of real life obligations or maybe only being able to play in the weekends.
So the sense I'm getting from you then is that you think the exploration aspect is fine, but there's a lot of people, yourself included, who don't have the time to do it.
Correct. And it's also sort of... The content is wasted on me, right? I find it really interesting to see these things happen, but I can never experience them.
I think that's a really, really fair point. You know, I find myself in the same kind of situation sometimes. And then even when I do get on, I have to choose between, you know, what I'm going to do. So I think that's a really fair point. And in a way, it's almost this perfect storm of that and these... just kind of incentives that kind of missed the mark in a way.
So when you look at the world event, like the first world event, Saradomin versus Amarak, when I was killing those soldiers on the field or doing things on the battlefield, I felt like I was participating in a community event. Now I log in and I don't really feel like I'm participating in anything, because soul obelisks, I don't know, they don't have meaning to me except for they give me free reputation.
Right, and we don't know what their purpose exactly is because there has been no lore on them as of yet.
I am clearly getting a degenerate experience of the city because somehow there's fun stuff going on, but I have no way of finding out how to interact with it. And also, how are people going to interact with this in half year?
Bingo.
In a couple of months.
Bingo. Mm-hmm.
And there is no excuse for not having something tying in the obelisk. There should be lore, whether that's in the library, whether that's throughout the city that you uncover. No matter how they did it, that should be a part of it. We should have had maybe even some clues so we knew or thought maybe this would be coming. You know, like if we did unlock it, how did we unlock it? I don't know. Did we? Mm-hmm. Was it a number of things that killed? Like there should. Yeah. No, you're exactly right on. There should be lore tying that together. There's
like
no excuse for that part of it.
I think that's. I mean, that's the point, right? If I would. I mean, because I can't interact with the exploration part really right now, I assume my experience will be similar to somebody who starts this content in like 3 months, who will come into the city with all a reasonably okay quest, right? Jack of Spades. And then I have to grind to tier 3 reputation. And then I get a really, really crappy quest, and I have to grind 3 more levels to get a really, really, really short quest. And then 3 more levels to get, well, we're going to discuss that in a bit, I guess, but like, it's not engaging at all. And like the whole reputation thing, like if I can make a bit of a sidetrack in that direction, what does it even have to do with the quests or stuff? Like, no. Our Men in the North takes place in Al-Khirit.
Yep.
And you only talk to Hassan.
Yeah.
So.
And why do you need Manifos Rep for that?
Yeah. I mean, maybe to get the favor from the librarian, but that feels arbitrary. That feels like adding a skill requirement because maybe you have to like lift up one rock. You have to get now have 80 strength. It's a bit like that, right?
Yeah.
It's so arbitrary. It feels like it's just there to push, like to stretch out the content.
So here's how continue.
No, go for it.
Okay, so here's how the Soul Obelisk came about. On June 6th, there was a teaser broadcasting game for the Magister. The continued desecration of the caverns below Menaphos and Sophonim have caused a flux of corrupted soul energy. The Magister has become aware of your presence. That was the first message that made us aware of the Magister. A day later, on the 7th... strange reverberations are causing the earth below Menaphos and Sophonim to groan. Their corruption and soul energies under the desert are becoming unstable. Later on in the day, the desert sands tremble with the undulating cry of countless despairing souls. Mysterious obelisks are starting appearing in the streets of Menaphos. And that's all we got explaining soul obelisks.
So can I say something really, really funny lore-wise?
Sure.
About this event? So this is a community event, right?
Yeah.
And these hints make it sort of clear that this is happening because people are pouring into Menaphos. Am I right?
Yes.
Now go back to the quest. We are the only outsider being given access to Menaphos.
And there's a bit of a plot hole, huh?
So now try tying this up, lore-wise. I want to see them try.
Also...
Yeah, point there.
Yeah. So this obelisk started spotting, and then Maud Matthews says on the 11th of June, we have no intention of removing them at this time, though they might become less common as time goes on.
I would be okay with that.
So, I think the biggest thing we can say from this is that next week, we end up getting some lore drops from the Magister and explaining all this. I mean, I think that's all there's got to be to it, right? If we're being hopeful. And,
I don't know. Like, I think we really sort of got to the bottom of this, saying, like, there's more to Menaphos than there is. It's just not as accessible for a large group of players.
Yeah, as we would like there to be.
And I think that might have been a mistake. And like, I sort of found out that there's so much more to Menaphos through our clan, through this podcast right now, just talking to you, maybe doing a bit of research. But I think the average player could miss this almost entirely, right?
Oh, yeah, because the obelisks are seemingly random and they only last for 7.5 minutes at a time.
Yeah, and like, I can see people not paying attention to the random messages it puts in your chat when you do the obelisk. So, Like, the content is very, very out there, and I think that might have been the core mistake of this piece of content. Like, I'm saying there's nothing new added to Manifold. Like, everything we see in Manifold, except for maybe the Slayer bit, we have seen somewhere else in the world. We have seen reputation, we have seen fishing, we have seen woodcutting, we've seen mining, pickpocketing. Like, the quests don't do anything spectacular. Like, all of it we have seen before. But the whole world event around it, that's a fun bit. But a lot of people don't get to interact with that.
Yeah. Also, the Magister will require 115 Slayer to kill, apparently.
And what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. I like that, though. I like that.
I mean, I guess it's good to start filling that.
Oh. The Magister will count as a Soul Reaper task and will drop 5 new lore books.
Okay.
There you go.
Rip, Master Quest Kate.
Hey, well, you got that 3 months amnesty.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
5 new lore books. This was revealed back in May on the Slayer Q&A, believe it or not. I guess we missed the whole point of the Magister. Maybe they didn't mention it by name, but it was in that Q&A.
That's also, like, there's so many things they release in, like, streams and over social network these days. It's hard to
Manifold really Insiders, see folks, what... where are they at?
Yeah. What happened to that? Yeah.
I have no idea. I never heard from any of them. I never followed any of them.
Maybe they know what's going on and just have decided not to share.
And Jagex didn't really release anything to them. So,
I would be surprised if Jagex sort of dropped the ball on that.
Yeah, because you would think that Jagex would want to keep promoting who these people are, but there was no news post and it was just a forum thread. Oh boy. Well, I think we've hit the nail on the head here.
Feeling this, aren't we?
The problem with Manifold. So unless you have anything else, game design, Sirion, but perhaps I'm stepping into a minefield there and we could be here for a long time.
I mean, basically I can go on for a while. I'm sort of satisfied to hear that apparently there's a lot more going on. I'm also really disappointed and really sad that I don't really get to interact with this. Sort of have to play catch up. And while I really like the idea of world defense, I'm hoping they're going to try this again at the next expansion and do it better. Because
I wouldn't count on it.
But yeah, like what you're saying, I'm also sort of not counting on it. So I don't know. But yeah, in general, I would not have minded a reputation system in general. I mean, they're never great, but like if it did something new and unique, it's not as much of a chore to interact with it. Like the Ark also has sort of a reputation system. It has a currency, it's pretty much the same. But the whole exploration of Uncharted Islands, there's some new mechanics in there. And
yeah,
Manifold absolutely lacks those, and that's my big issue with Manifold. It has nothing new, and that makes interacting with it like there's no reason for it except for getting my quest cape, like retaining my quest cape past the amnesty period.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it does have one new thing, and I don't know, Shane, when you want me to break the rest of the bad news.
Go for it.
Slayer front. Okay, well, let's with the good news and what it did bring that was new, and that is your player-owned Slayer dungeon. I mean, it's really good on so many different levels. I mean, it's fun to capture the souls. It's fun to, you know, play RuneScape Pokemon. It's fun. And it's nice to, you can either cater your dungeon to, you know, high Slayer XP, and you can go down there and do your assignments. You don't have to worry about overcrowding. It's really nice. Or you can set it up to have, you know, higher GP kind of rewards and monsters that do that. It's nice that we were given a way to customize our Slayer skill without another toggle. I mean, this is actually
that's pretty
cool.
Impressive. Yeah,
you know.
I mean, I have to confess that I haven't interacted with the Slayer part of this update at all yet, mostly because I'm not interested in anything combat related in general, but also because I sort of wanted to the whole hype and business around it sort of die down before go into the crowded areas. But like, it sounds like, I mean, Slayer was going to be a focus of this expansion. It seems that they sort of did that, right? I'm happy for that. But also, it sort of feels that when they say, yeah, we're going to do Slayer, but we're not going to leave the questers and the skillers behind, that they didn't deliver on that. Like,
I would agree with that. There is a bit of unfortunate news that can at this point be confirmed with the Slayer update, which is, contrary to what the lead NPC alludes to when you first start your Slayer Codex, you cannot give yourself assignments. So there should be more to filling out this Codex than what we get, which is basically just a small XP boost on our completed Slayer helmet, because it takes considerable time and there is a lot of RNG involved in collecting these souls, and you have to collect 143 of them. I go into this in a lot more depth with this month's article, but that's the gist of it, and really would have liked to seen something more out of that Slayer Codex. Otherwise, I'm super happy with that portion of the update. I couldn't be better.
And, you know, I think having the ability to assign yourself those tasks with the Slayer dungeon was a great hope for many people who had 99 Slayer. But at the same time, I can see why they wouldn't want to do that. And I'd also like to point out to everyone that there is a way to assign yourself tasks in-game by way of the Slayer mask that you can get on Treasure Hunter or through Vic if you have Vic points currently.
So Jagex promised that like Slayer after 99 will be completely different, right? It will be completely different. Did they deliver on that promise, or is it pretty much more of the same with slight variations?
No, I mean, I think Slayer is still Slayer, and that's, I mean, frankly, that's what I like about it. I think like the new mobs that were added are the appropriate difficulty. They have the appropriate amount of mechanics for Slayer. These aren't mini bosses like the Ripper Demons, and they're not your normal, you know, easy mobs like your Abbey Demons. They're right where they should be. It feels right to me, and I think they used mechanics that worked in the past, like with the Legion's dungeon, and set up like an ecosystem in this new Slayer dungeon. I think that works really well. The souls is a whole new, that is new. We've never really had anything like that, and that's really cool. And the player owned Slayer dungeon is just, like I said, that's the jewel of the whole expansion. And that is very different. But as for the way Slayer works, nah, Slayer is Slayer, and I'm actually glad, you know. I mean, I wouldn't want that to go too far in
yeah, because that
direction.
That's the point, right? They wanted to go Slayer to 120 because people liked it, and then they were like saying we're also going to make it completely different, and then you get into this paradox, like if you make it longer but people aren't going to like it,
yeah,
then you have trouble. But yeah, and it seems that they sort of got that right, which means, well, that builds some trust that they can still figure these things out. But it also feels like the rest has sort of been built around it and hasn't gotten as much attention as the core of the update, which makes the overall impression, I feel, a bit sloppy and maybe not as good as it could have been.
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely fair. And I mean, and even within Slayer, there is still room. Like, we had 12 new mobs. You know, we got the new dungeon. We got the
new loot mechanic.
Player owned, yeah, the new loot mechanic. So, you know, a new Slayer helmet. So we got a lot with it. Is there room for more? Oh, yes. And should there be more, like when you're talking about a 21 level expansion? Yeah. I mean, we can get more out of this, but this was good. I have like no criticism. Just, you know, as always, you can always do better. You can always expand.
Yeah.
Cool.
I want to take just this opportunity to ask a quick question, and we'll move on to the patch notes from this week. Sirion, you'll recall in our post ARC episode and post iPhone 7 episode, we had the RSBNB update episode entitled Courage, in which we talked about Jagex taking up the courage to do updates that they hadn't done before. And, you know, looking forward now to where we are with Menafos, do you think that they have exercised courage in Menafos and trying something new?
No.
No? Okay.
No. That's a difficult question, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, I mean, courage is sort of going to the expansion model. That showed courage. In the actual content, they seem to have built on a lot of things that worked, right? And they also seem to have built on a few things that didn't work, tried to make it better, and didn't really succeed at that. So, I don't know. Like, courage would have been introducing a whole new thing, like sinkholes, like the big chin. That would have been courage. Right now, they seem to have just taken a lot of like the existing content and sort of put it in a slightly new shape, put a label on it, and that's it.
You know what Shifting Tombs reminds me of? It reminds me of a 5-minute dungeoneering run, not in Daemon 9. Kind of. Minus the combat.
It's even more boring. Like, yeah. There's only like 3 different things you can do. It pales in comparison to dungeoneering. I would rather spend an hour doing dungeoneering than 5 minutes. No, that's not true. But
but dungeoneering had meaningful, tangible rewards.
And I would also like to point out that dungeoneering was the last skill and last major update that Andrew Gower worked on before leaving the company.
Really? I didn't know that.
It puts Dungeoneering in a new light, doesn't it?
It does.
It does quite, yeah. I mean, of course, it was the Gower quest, but...
Well, that doesn't count, really, because he was just an advisor on that. So...
Yeah, that does a bit put it in a new light. It was probably the last skill that really... Well, invention was pretty...
But it was an elite skill.
Let's not open that can of worms again.
I'm good at that, all right, Shane? Jeez.
All right. I'm going to move on to the patch notes, unless there's anything else that's burning.
Nope.
Put that in perspective. Dungeoneering, last skill that Andrew Gower worked on, versus the arc. Compare the – yes, we said that Dungeoneering wasn't a true skill and it was a minigame. But compare the magnitude of effect and the magnitude of scope and the magnitude of new content, the magnitude of new techniques, the magnitude of new engine technology that came with Dungeoneering compared to Menafos. Menafos is called an expansion. Dungeoneering is called a new skill.
Yeah, but apples and oranges – I mean,
is it though?
It's not. Yeah, I think so. It's not because Dungeoneering.
Do you think Menafos?
I am not a fan of Dungeoneering, and I'm going to defend it right now. The most I've ever defended it on this podcast. And I'm going to say that Dungeoneering itself is more of an expansion than Menafos, because with Dungeoneering, you have new graphics assets, you have new lore, you have new items, you have new group things to do with people, you have new mini games that eventually came out, you have a new engine mechanic for dynamically generated dungeons, for crying out loud, and there's 60 floors of this content that people took forever to unlock.
when Dungeoneering came out, only like the first half came out, right? And we didn't have sinkholes either. But if you look at Dungeoneering, if that didn't exist
did
in the game, right?
Out? That came out in April.
2011.
No, 2010.
If that didn't exist, what if this expansion was Dungeoneering if it first came out? What if it was?
Bingo.
I think it would have been... I think I would have Bingo. Appreciated it more than Menophos.
Yeah.
See, but there's one aspect of Dungeoneering that we're not really talking about, and that is the compulsory nature of it. Like, you didn't have a choice to engage in that content.
I didn't.
If you
engage
wanted
in
a max cape. Yeah.
Yeah, but you also sure, need.
I mean, also, I don't know. You're not. You're not like.
Menophos
not
also.
About the cape, though.
You also have to You also have to interact with Menophos if you want to get your quest cape back.
Well, I guess that's... Yeah, well, I guess that's true.
Like, what's the difference between getting your quest cape or your max cape? Like, both sort of force you to do this content.
Yeah.
That is
and
true.
I'll
give you that.
I mean, I guess 99 Dungeoneering takes longer than getting tier 9 reputation in Menophos.
Exactly.
But I think I had more fun getting 99 Dungeoneering than I'm having getting 9 reputation in Menophos.
Yes.
Does anyone,
which is a really low bar to set.
Does anyone recall when the second half of Dungeoneering came out?
No, I don't. Might have been. I think it took longer than people wanted. Like it was a bit, pretty big. But
I didn't even mess with it for a long time after it came out.
Me neither.
Because you got Frozen, Abandoned, 1, Furnished, Abandoned, 2, Occult, and Warped. I think you just got Frozen. The two Abandoned Floors and Furnished, then Occult and Warped were the last two to come out, if I recall how that worked. Now, let me just look at the level matrix on this. Does anyone know here, because I'm not a Dungeoneering person, what level the Occult Floors start at?
Occult Floors, probably, I think
47, 48, somewhere like that.
No, like the floors?
The floor.
I think it's like
level
requirement.
Level requirement, I would guess around 70.
Yes, Occult is 71 to 93. Warped is 95 to 119. So, did they bring Occult out at the beginning?
Nope.
No, they didn't. So, it was a skill to level 69, and then the second update finished it.
Yep.
Okay. So, in essence, you could call Dungeoneering an expansion if they would have brought Occult and Warped out at the same time. But it's pretty close.
Yeah. That's pretty close. I guess
You make me more sad about Menophos.
I know. Shane has an uncanny ability to do that.
I wonder what will happen to Tycho, because, oh boy, that might be a big thing for him.
Poor guy.
Yeah, breaking Tycho's heart once again. Okay, that is a revelation, and I didn't come into this podcast attempting to make that connection, but okay. Well, let's move on to the patch notes then. Sorry to end that kind of ominously there.
Now you've done it. Now that you made us cry.
All right, Menophos District houses containing cats now unlock a tier 5 reputation, so you have to wait until tier 5 to start collecting your cats.
Food.
Yeah, I agree. Players can no longer enter Menophos District houses without the correct reputation tier. You know, I think given these two things and people were taking part in the content prior to that, I think they should have just left it the way it was. Because it's been out 3 weeks now and there have been people who have been able to do this before. It doesn't make sense to change these at this point.
I am currently trying to imagine going into Menophos, being like, oh, new city, let's explore this house. You need level 5 reputation to get in. Okay, let's try this house. You need level 5 reputation to get in. That feels like being free to play all over again.
And there better be something damn good behind that door, too, because you're like, oh, what's this? Oh, it's going to be so cool. You walk in there, it's a cat. You're like, are you serious? A cat?
That's the same I mean, I was like looking at reputation, right? And level 9 gives you a new quest. Do you know what level 10 gives you?
A cosmetic.
Well, level 10 gives you the weird magic carpet bonus that's getting. Level 8, right. I was really close to I'm really close to getting tier 8 reputation. I was like, okay, I get a new reward. It's an upgrade to my Tumican banner, which I'm not using. Well, that's just great. And the same with like all the other tiers. It's just, if you do a reputation system, then make sure that you give something at every tier that's actually useful.
Yep. Yeah.
Did you sell a carpet? I want a carpet.
No, I think at like level 10 Manifold's reputation, that whenever you skill anywhere in the world, you can get like magic carpet pieces or something. And if you put them together, you get like bonus XP or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit like your Guffix butterfly.
Well, bummer. I want a magic carpet pet.
You can get a magic carpet pet if you get level 10 in one of the districts.
Okay. Well, there's and something then you get the to shoot for.
Yeah. Okay.
The soul talisman can now be traded via the Grand Exchange. Obviously, they were wanting to see how high these would go market value when people were trading them back and forth. And oh boy, do I have a story about this later. Players are now correctly awarded the full amount of reputation when killing a last monster on their Slayer task in the Sophonim Slayer dungeon. So, Tannis, you're getting ripped off a little bit there.
Yeah, jeez.
So that'll make things better, I guess, for rep there. The next banker no longer moves around, making her easier to find with lots of players in the area. These are some Next Angel of Death fixes that are added in. Always nice to see that. Next Angel of Death no longer targets another player who isn't the tank when restarting her attacks. Okay, that seems like a bit of a huge problem with the combat system there, not realizing who has aggro.
I'm not the tank. Voke it. Come on, guys. What the hell? This is bullshit.
All players who participate and defeat Nex in the Angel of Death encounter will be able to obtain the Lorp book drops from the exit pillar. This is regardless of the amount of damage dealt for ease of access. Finally, thank you, Jagex. This is great for people who just want to get the lore books, I think. Go in there with a mass and do a little bit of damage and have a chance of getting the lore book. I think that's a good way to go. What do you guys think?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to make people that are really into quest have to do that level of combat, so that's good.
Players who have been pinned under the icicle during the next Angel of Death encounter will now no longer get hit by the shadows during the final phase. All right. It seems like that has been an issue, and it's good it's been fixed. Everyone's favorite Gobi, Tunks, has been out on a new adventure around Gilanor, so this is kind of like Bob the Cat. You can find a Gobi wandering around the world, if you so choose to. I think you can...
Not really.
Yeah, no. I think you can thank Mod Shawnee for that one. Mr. X has taken all hardcore players' jars of Divine Light for safekeeping. He will continue to open the jar upon death as before. He will also allow you to open it by speaking to him. For anyone wondering, these are, of course, the jars that allow people to convert a hardcore Iron Man into a standard Iron Man character. So if you're wondering where that is, if you're one of those, that is how you can access it. And now here's,
it can also convert your Iron Man, can it?
Yes, to a standard character, indeed. Now here's one for Sirion. The falling skyboxes now utilize volumetric lighting when activated by the skybox and filters option, and they include Dusk, Dawn, Midday, Throne, Eclipse, Nightstone, Daystone, and Goshima.
Yeah, except for the volumetric lightning, looks a bit glitchy. There's artifacts all over the screen when you use it.
Oh,
so it's I have a little.
That
story
might just
with
be
that.
Your video card because it works fine for me.
Yeah, maybe. My video card is pretty damn good though. So.
Oh, you're not on the Mac. Okay.
No, this is not on the Mac. This is on my gaming PC. So. I don't know. It looks a bit... You have to spot it. Like, usually you don't see it, but you have to spot it. But, like, it doesn't look great all the time.
All right. What's your story, Tannis?
Oh, I was going to say, I found this week that if I See, I could never do a living or a ice strike worm task because it blended in. You couldn't see them moving. If you go there, and then I would use like the skybox eclipse, but then invert the collars, you can totally see it. You can totally see them on the ground, but it makes everything like a darker, but you can see them moving. So for the first time ever, I can do strike worms now. Yay.
Oh, that's good. Pretty cool. Especially from an accessibility perspective.
Yeah.
I wish Jagex would have put a note in the news posting about that because, you know, this is the one of the largest accessibility updates that RuneScape has seen, but they didn't really bill it as that.
They never thought about it. I guarantee you they never thought about it. But yes, I mean, you know, how long has Ice Strike's been around? This is the first time I've been able to do them. So, and wow, what a good task. Like, I've been missing out.
Right on. All right. Jagex also announced this week that they're doing a rare refresh of rares of the rare item token store. So from the 21st of June until the 26th, you can get either some of these rares or even rare item tokens on Treasure Hunter. Along with this, they did bring out some new rares, including a bad weather umbrella, an octopus backpack, glow bug in a jar, the springing pet, a bunch of balloons, rest animation, Polly the Parrot, a fan, which you can see in the screenshot on the news posting, clearly Menifo's Eastern Lines related, and a telescope.
I guess Jagex got fed up with the heat wave here in the UK as well.
Yeah, hence the fan and I'm guessing, well, maybe the balloon one and the bad weather.
Oh, the rain. I would settle for the rain.
Oh, you can see the springy pet right here in the very end of the screenshot. It's almost like a little slinky. That's neat.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. It's one of those rainbow ones. I had one of those when I was younger. How about you guys?
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I had the old chrome kind of metal slinky. Yeah.
I didn't like those ones because if you touched them for too long, they made your hands smell weird.
Yeah.
There's also some limited rares that are not going to be restocked, and this includes the Golden Cane, if you want that, the Flaming Head, Sunglasses, Leprechaun Hat, Silverhawk, the Mkondo Pistol, Axe, and Channeling Rod. I know lots of people use the Sunglasses, so that might be one to look at, as well as the Leprechaun Hat. So these won't be restocked after June 26th, so that's probably the ones you want to look at. And there's
sunglasses also have been scientifically proven to make you at least 20% cooler.
Yeah, and you and you're an expert about that in game, eh? I see what you did there. And then, of course, there's the current rares, including the potion hat, the hype train, and whatnot. But not much to write home about there. So, you guys interested in any of these?
Well, I'm going to have to get some sunglasses for my Magic Mike outfit.
Oh, boy. I was debating getting the leprechaun hat because it's green, but I don't know.
I might get a bunch of balloons. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I hardly use pets, so...
The balloon is the resting animation, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because the springy pet is, I find really cool, but I never use pets. So.
Oh, okay. You know what I wish I could do? I wish I could override the appearance of my legendary pet.
Wouldn't that be cool? Yes, that would be cool.
Because I don't really like how they look. But
you can override them with boss pets, can't you? Wasn't that the whole thing?
Was it?
I think so. Well, that's just familiars. No, never mind. That's just
familiars. It's familiars.
Yeah. Jagex feature plus.
Anyways, story about the legendary pet incoming in my Fight Club overview. So,
oh God!
Yes, you guys ready for Fight Club?
Ready?
No, I still need I still need like 100k wrap. So, not really.
Oh well.
I just want to hear about Shane's sacrifice.
Yeah, so
because he did it for us.
Fight Club is the final quest in this series. It's a desert quest. This one takes place all in Menifos, so there's no
confession. Confession. It took me 2 weeks to find the pun.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. You didn't learn English first when you were a child.
That's true, though.
So, requires our man in the north and rank 9 Menifos rep, which is 254,100 rep.
It's a lot.
Hey, I said I sacrificed for you, so.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Fight Club. This quest is really short. If you don't read anything, you could potentially be done in under 5 minutes.
What?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Well, not including the boss fight. The boss fight probably takes another 10 minutes, so 15 minutes on top, probably.
For the effort you put in, you'd expect at least something as long as Walgotic sleeps.
Nope. It took me a maximum of 35 minutes, but you'll see why. So the quest starts by talking to Hassan in the Merchants District, and he basically wants to talk to you in private. And as you know, in Hassan's house, that's where Asan also lives, and she plugs her ears and makes the la 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 la, la thing so that,
that works.
That she won't hear. So when you're having this chat with Hassan, Osman pops out of nowhere and explains that he's everywhere in the city and he sees everything and so on and so forth. And he asks you what you see in Menaphos, and you can respond. And there's options like where you can see a rich city where people are content, or you can see a city that is falling apart and is filled with strife. Or there's one where the people are getting really restless and want to see change. So there's three options there. It doesn't matter which one you choose. So you just say what you see. And basically what Osman ends up telling you after you have this discussion with him, and I should say spoilers ahead at this point, is that the workers in Menaphos are essentially slaves and are broken, as in, you know, they have no hope for the future whatsoever and are just content to do the menial labor that they have been assigned in the workers' district. And, you know, Asen trades nefarious goods and gossip. And if the gossip happens to be on your family, you better be careful, because that gossip makes its way to the Imperial District and enables, quote unquote, entire families to disappear overnight unless they pay her to keep the secrets. And if you descend to Menaphos, it's met with brutal force. So Osman wants to change Menaphos, and he wants to start a coup, because as we learn in Our Man in the North, Osman is next in line for the throne there, based on the Senlitan. He asks for your help, and this is the ultimate purpose of this quest, is for you to aid him in a coup in Menaphos. He wants to restore social justice once he has been installed as pharaoh. And those are his exact words that Jagex used for the Osman character.
And this is the spy Osman?
Yeah.
Never trust a spy. I don't have a good feeling about this.
Anyways, Osman says that you need to go around to the four districts and get the leaders on board with the coup. So you do that. You start with Asen, and she will say that if she keeps her position and the power that she has in Menaphos right now, she will help you with the coup. She then directs you to the ports district to talk to Wadid, because he can, of course, help her do that. Wadid says that he already knows about the coup and agrees to go along with it, but he also wants some new workers for his ports district, people who actually want to work there to load his ships and whatnot, not just, you know, bum sailors. And then following this, he says, oh, perhaps you can go talk to Battle in the workers' district, and he can get some people who would be interested in working for me in Menaphos. So then you head to the workers' district, and he highlights what Osman said about the plight of his workers and how bad things are actually going in Menaphos. They're starving and they can't get by, and they are always scared for the loss of their jobs, and they don't have any great prospects for the future going forward. So they're kind of at a dead end. So following this, you head to the Imperial District and talk to Akamit, and her only condition is that the coup be bloodless and that she also wants a Jack of Spades brought to justice. And you'll recall from the Jack of Spades quest that the Jack of Spades is, of course, Ozan. Now,
I was going to ask, like, will we see Ozan again? Because that feels a bit like an untied
right
end.
Now, you can talk to Ozan and Shifting Tombs. He's still there. And you suggest that, oh, maybe I can arrest you or something like that. But he says, oh, no, we have to fake my death. So what he does is he gives you his cowl and says that you can say that you faked my death and that you killed me and whatnot by coating it with blood. And that'll make me look like I'm dead. So there's, you know, just conveniently in the Merchants District, a a fish stall, and that fish stall in the merchant's district has some fish guts beside it and blood, of course. So you can dip the cowl in the blood there and then return it to Akamet, and lo and behold, she believes that Ozan is dead.
Sure, yeah.
And then you return to each of the other four heads in reverse order. So we've been to Akamet to explain that. We then head to Batal and say that his workers are going to have the option to work elsewhere, and they won't be living the menial lives that they're living now. And then you return to Wadded in the Ports District and tell him that you got new workers for him. And finally, return to Asan and say that Wadded agreed to her request that she will stay in a position of power after the coup. And there you go. Lo and behold, you have the four faction heads in Menaphos on board with your coup. So
this is actually where reputation sort of makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense because you are experienced and you know everyone in the city, and you know they trust you now, and you can be their emissary for them, so to speak, in linking this up. So,
okay.
So I mean, the reputation kind of does make sense in this quest, but that's about it from there. And then, you know, it's also worth saying, just going back to the Imperial District in Akamet, you say that you buried Ozan, but she says, oh, you better be careful. Make sure it was deep enough because the jackals will dig him up. So it's not known at this point that Ozan isn't actually dead. They believe he is dead. So I'm not sure when we'll actually deal with this. I didn't think about this during the quest, but I don't think he's seen it all at the rest of this quest here. So that's going to be something interesting going forward for future desert quests. And yes, there are future desert quests here. So then you head to the Pharaoh's Temple, and the boss fight begins. So as you can see, as I've illustrated so far, if you just go through the various four areas in the city here, this will take you about 5 to 10 minutes to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're on to the boss fight, which is the final part of the quest. So you see how short it is now.
Yeah.
So basically what happens then is you head into the pyramid and tell the Pharaoh that his time is up, but he will send four Menaphite Palace guards towards you. Two of them have 20,000 life points. The other two have 25,000 life points. They use a variety of combat tactics from melee to magic. So obviously you want to take the melee ones out first because you're going to want to use magic for this whole fight. Just mage them down. It's not a real hard fight here. They're level 105. Not much else to say on these critters here. But then after you dispose of them comes your fight with the Pharaoh. And this Pharaoh has 150,000 life points. And as I mentioned, you want to use magic or ranged because there is an attack that the Pharaoh can do that will stun you and prevent you from moving and getting close to her. So definitely good to keep it at a distance. The Pharaoh has 150,000 life points, and there's a potential for a flame special attack to be used, which will hit you for 1,000 damage a tick. So if you see flames, you either got to move away from them or just keep moving in general while you're running through this boss fight. There's also the chance that she will attempt to make you kneel down, and you can get out of this using freedom or preventing it with anticipation. So you want to have freedom and anticipation on your action bar when this is happening. Finally, there is a rapid-fire magical attack that the Pharaoh uses that hits you three times for a good deal of damage. I'd say probably around 2,000 to 2,500 damage per shot. So deflect magic reduces the amplitude of that. So deflect magic is probably the prayer you want to be using. I didn't do that the first time and resulted in me having to take the Pharaoh down a second time. And this is where the legendary pet story comes in, because I had the legendary pet here set up as a beast of burden. But what I also didn't realize is I also had the ability set up so the legendary pet could drag me to safety. So I didn't die. I was saved with 133 life points by the legendary pet.
Wow.
Oh, that's nice.
What kind of pet do you have, Shane?
I think it's the Blood Pouncer. I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I have that one too. I think that one may have come in like loyalty reward or something. I don't know.
So,
Shane was saved by his kitty cat.
Yes. And, you know, aww, you might think about where to go when this when you come back if you leave the battle here. But what you want to do if you leave the battle is you don't go back to the pyramid. You head back to Hassan, and he will teleport you right into the pyramid for the quest. So that was a little bit confusing. I thought maybe it had bugged out because I was pulled out of the battle by my pet. But it was just a matter of heading back to Hassan, and he will put you right back in the correct place.
That's a bit weird.
Yeah. Because normally you'd think you would be able to just walk back right in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, Inventory of Rocktail did it. You'll also want to bring some of those matte feathers that you use for Slayer, because those the attacks used by the Pharaoh have the ability to put that corruption dot on you that you can get in the Slayer dungeon as well. So you'll want to bring a few of those along for the battle. So that covers the core mechanics of this boss fight. From that point, it's just a matter of DPSing it down. There's not too much difference based on the entire fight. Just end up making sure you don't get stunned, because that's what did me in, is I got stunned and a group of the fire spawned below me, and I was hit for a good deal of damage when I was somewhere around 4,000 life points, and that's what caused my untimely death, or almost death, if you refer to the legendary pet. So, the creature has no weakness, so just use whatever magic spell you want. And that's pretty much the quest.
Well,
and
so after the quest, will like the city actually change? Will you like see people in the ports district or something?
Well, here we go. After the boss fight is over, you get a little cutscene with the Pharaoh and whatnot, and them trying to figure out what to do with the Pharaoh. You get a choice to either execute him, exile him to the Ark. Let's see. What
That's pretty funny.
That's so amusing.
I knew that would be your reaction when I mentioned that. You get exiled to the Ark. but execute him, exile him to the Ark, make him work as a worker in the worker district, or throw him in prison. And each of the four district heads want a different thing, but ultimately you get to decide on this, or so you think. I chose to make him work in the workers' district, but then once Osman appears and realizes that he is now the Pharaoh, he will decide what happens. And
off with his hat.
That's exactly right. That's what Osman does to him.
Well, that's so unusual for you, Shane. You usually execute everybody.
Well, I just thought he put these people to work. Let's just put him to work in the workers' district, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
So, that's it for the core of this quest on Menaphos. And then you're treated to another cutscene. I thought it was over after this, but there's one more cutscene where this takes place, and it features Amasket, Jabri, and two thralls. Guess where it takes place? No, the Soul Altar.
Oh, okay.
So, the Soul Altar appears in this quest. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to see what's happening here, because this felt so far out of left field until you really parse away the dialogue of what's happening in this quest. So I'm just going to read to you guys some of the stuff that's happening in the Soul Altar, but you end up here and you realize you're beneath Menaphos, and Jabri and Amasket are having this discussion. And ultimately what is said is that Amasket or sorry, Jabri explains to Amisket that their installed pharaoh's reign has ended, and Amisket leads on to believe that herself has determined that Osman should be the pharaoh. So, you know how in the previous quest we heard that it was set up that it would be Osman's reign next in line for the pharaohship? Well, mm-hmm. It turns out this was decided by Amisket herself.
Oh, damn.
And the words used are is that Osman should be pharaoh through the breadcrumbs that we have laid. And they seem to know that at some point in the future he'll fail. So that's kind of pointing the direction we're going for the next quest. And
so this entire thing that we worked all this reputation for is just a prelude.
Pretty much. And, you know, they say that Osman will fail at some point in the future. And Amisket had the initial goal of controlling Manifos and controlling humans surrounding it. But she says that she's cast out any goals for the humans. And there's only one obstacle between her and her final goal, which we don't exactly know what that is at this point. So we're kind of heading towards another god structure for this quest.
Do we
quest.
Not?
I don't think so.
I thought she was after the Caribbean.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That might be it, actually. Thank you for reminding me of that. Uh-huh. Also with this, the thralls end up speaking, and they want Amisket to stop. They don't want the anger to consume her. And they say that she should let it go. And Amisket doesn't stop in the end. She ends up killing Jabri. And Jabri's life ends, stating that he is afraid for Amisket. So basically what this means is that Tutmakin was speaking through the thralls to tell Amisket what should and she shouldn't be focusing on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also worth noting that this is, of course, a fifth age quest.
Hmm.
So, hence the reason why Tutmakin doesn't appear, and it's okay for Amisket to appear. And I did check in with Colton on this in the last week, and he said that the only one who would violate the edicts in the fifth age of appearing would be Tutmakin, so we're good on that front. But, I mean, I think they're going to ultimately take the desert quest into the sixth age here. And it looks like this is what the core aspect of Menaphos was to install Osman as pharaoh and prepare for some action by Amisket in the future, potentially relating to the Kharid-Ib. So
it's kind of cool how this like got storyline, but I also first of all I was sort of hoping for like a finished off thing with an expansion in terms of like quest series,
right?
And second of all, this is really diluted, right? You get really short quests spread out by all this reputation grinding, which I think sort of takes away from the experience.
Yeah.
If you put all these quests together into one big quest, that would not have felt like a particularly long quest, I feel.
I agree with that, and I think that is what could have happened alternatively here. Because each of these quests are master level related, so.
Yeah. I feel they might have been split up for the sake of... Maybe it was one quest in the original design at level tier 9, and they felt it was too long in one go, and maybe that's why they split it up, but like...
Or there wasn't enough stuff in the reputation below to make it worthwhile.
That wouldn't surprise me if you look at the rewards, but yeah. I don't know. I'm really disappointed that like the quests are so minimal.
Yeah, it was like, really short.
Like four quests we were going to be given. This, I don't know. It feels really minimal.
Yeah. But, you know, RS2 came out in 2004. It's 2017. 13 years ago, we got the runecrafting skill, and the runecrafting skill is now complete.
Woohoo!
So Soul Talismans.
I'm sad though.
Oh?
I was hoping for Elemental Workshop 5.
Yeah, for the Soul Altar. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's below Manaphos, too. So a bit of a discussion on the Soul Altar. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get one of these talismans at the quest or whatnot, so I just picked up two of them. I didn't think they were going to go for sale. I spent 300K on a Soul Talisman.
Hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
I've gotten a few of those in the bank from the dungeon.
Yeah, you should have sold them before. You should have sold them before the Grand Exchange started taking them.
Oh darn!
Because they're going for 33K each on the Grand Exchange right now.
Well, I don't trade with people like that very much anyway.
Yeah, so I did it because I wasn't sure if it was going to happen. I wanted to have it for the quest, but that's there. So I spent that much on the Soul Talisman just for the quest, and I can say, I mean, it's interesting. And the Soul Altar works completely different to any other altar. Because, well, first off, let me tell how you get to it. You can use the Soul Talisman in any talisman to lead you to where the Runecrafting Altar is. So if you do that and you're in Manaphos, it will lead you to the southwest. So that's either the Ports District or the Imperial District. And you'll find out that it is in the Imperial District on the very southern west tip of it. There is a fountain. And if you use the Soul Talisman near that fountain, it'll say it pulls towards the ground. So then you just take a chance and you use the talisman on the fountain, and it drains the water out of that fountain, and a staircase appears.
Dun, dun, dun.
Then you get a short little tunnel, and you get the standard access to the altar that we've all become accustomed to, where you click on it, and then you get taken to the altar itself. Now, inside this altar, it works completely differently. There is a charger contraption hooked up to the altar that I can only assume was put in place by Amisket. I mean, that's got to be the explanation behind it. I'm not sure what it's for. Maybe we'll find out in a future quest. But it looks weird. And you and I were talking about the Sirion. It looks invention-y, doesn't it?
Yes. Now, since then, I had another revelation. I said it looks very invention-y. Invention wasn't around in the Fifth Age.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. So, is this another lore fill, or how does this work?
Yeah, and I mean, I think we definitely need some more backstory behind the Soul Altar. Maybe next week, maybe in a future quest. I don't know. But, anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, this is one of these things, again, like, they put something in the game, it works completely different without explanation, and I find it a bit weird. I don't know. It feels arbitrary.
Yeah. And the Soul Altar has its own unique mechanic to it. You can put essence into the altar, up to 100 of them, and then after that, you have to charge the altar up, and you get 10 XP for each time you charge it. So that's the standard XP you would be getting for your soul runes. Now, for essence creates one charge and gives 10 experience. So that means with your 100 essence you put in, you can get 25 charges and 250 XP off of it. Each charge takes around 5 seconds to create, and you need 1.25 charges for one soul room. So, doing the math on this means that you have 25 charges, and at most you can create 20 soul runes per inventory of 100 essence. So they didn't really want us creating that many soul runes here.
Clearly.
Yeah. And what's more is that for each charge that you create, so you have 25 charges, you get 220 XP when creating the rune. So that means that a full load of essence on this device will give you 5,500 runecrafting experience. And
compared to what for blood runes? Do you know?
Blood runes are 9.5 per rune. And you can do probably around, I think around 70, I'm just going to say, is a safe number.
But that's a lot quicker, though.
Yeah, it is.
So soul wounds are not a good wound crafting training.
No, they're not.
Okay.
They don't. Well,
I mean, I heard it was one of those money versus experience type of things.
Yeah.
Of course, this came from efficiency experts. And
and they're right on this because soul runes are about 500 GP each right now.
Oh, that's going to drop, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can look at it either way. And, I mean, it's a question of if you were doing this through the Abyss, that would be 10K XP per load. So add in bonus XP, and that's times three. We're looking at around 15,000 XP per 100 essence. So it takes longer, but it's a lot of XP.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just found it really interesting the way it works. So I don't know. I'm going to play with the Soul Altar a bit more and see where it comes out in terms of XP for compared to, you know, RuneSpan and whatnot. But I think the thing that I want to say is that I'm really happy that Soul Runes are finally in game with the Soul Altar.
Yep.
So.
And I'm really happy it didn't come in through Elemental Workshop.
Oh, so,
I
wish it did.
I know you do.
So, like, back to my question, like, after the quest, do you actually see changes in the city? Like,
no.
Are there people in the port district?
No. It's same, as far as I can tell.
That's a bit of a shame, because, like, what I really like about Manifolds, like, let me be positive for a second here, is that it actually feels like a city. This is something I always disliked about Fifth Dinners. Like, it's not a real city. It's too symmetric. Like, geographically, it's disconnected. And Manifolds is a place where if you don't know your way around in the beginning, you can get lost.
That's right.
And it feels, I mean, it's still a bit disconnected. Like, it feels very arbitrarily divided in sectors. Like, I would have liked a bit more connection there. But it feels more like a city. There's more bustling, like, there's stuff going on. And they have this quest that really talks about, like, this information gossip trade. It feels more alive than Fifth Dinners. And I think they could have probably done better still, but what they did reasonably well with Manifolds is that they made it feel like a city that's where there's actually stuff going on.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think they did a good job with that. So
yeah. Like the guards walking around that kind of stuff felt quite organic and felt like there was actually something going on. It felt more comparable to a city like Varrock or Falador, where there's just so much going on. But Fifth Dinners it's just static. It's not a city. It's a tower with some stuff around.
Yeah. This says that it is roughly you can get 91 essence in with all pouches and a Titan, and it's, you know, just over 2 minutes, and you load that, and apparently it's 300K XP an hour. Runecrafting XP. Yep.
That's what they were saying. It was pretty high.
But you're not going to make much money off of it because you have that low 1 out of 5 or something like that runecrafting rate. So,
cool.
Could you imagine if this came out before RuneSpan?
It would have been amazing.
Yeah.
I guess at least you have options now. I mean, it fills out the runecrafting skill a little
bit
more.
And imagine doing it through the Abyss as well. Oof.
Yeah.
This works really well together with the updates they did to the runecrafting skill in the Abyss. So
I agree. And there's options now. If you don't want to touch RuneSpan, you're good. Alrighty. Anything else on Menaphos or RuneScape related, or shall we just jump on to tech news? No questions.
I think we discussed enough.
Alrighty then. Well, first piece of tech news this week comes from Google and YouTube, and that they're taking further actions to try and limit the amount of extremist content that appears on YouTube. They wrote in the Financial Times this past week that they plan to increase use of technology to help identify extremist and terrorism-related videos, and it'll also increase the number of people experts that are looking at videos and looking at reports and whatnot on YouTube. And if they find these videos, they're also going to be taking a tougher stance on them, especially ones that don't violate its policies, and they will increase its efforts to redirect potential ISIS recruits to anti-terrorist content. And of course, these changes are as a result of the British government and some other big advertisers that pulled their ads from the YouTube platform because they appeared next to videos containing extremist, homophobic, and racist content. Now, I think...
So, you picked this, right,
Shane? I did.
Okay, so let me ask you a question that you can keep in mind while discussing this. We have discussed a bunch of articles like this, like Google, Facebook, YouTube. They all, like, try to change, like, their guidelines and make sure that it all works. What's specific about this particular piece of news? Why did you choose this?
I feel that this is getting to a point for Google in particular where Google needs to step forward and do something a little bit more because they are going to start feeling it from the perspective of the advertisers.
Okay.
And I think another reason that this is the case, that Google wants to go down this path, is because if you will recall, I think we talked about it a few weeks ago on the show, they're going to be limiting the kind of ads that will display in Chrome next year so that they won't have any of those annoying ads that split your screen or pop unders and whatnot. They basically want to sanitize the ad platform on the internet, of course, to ensure Google's own longevity, right?
Correct.
So I think that... that is what's going to be different about it this time, is that rather than saying, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do something different here. Google actually has a horse in the race this time. And I think if they can get the ads right and remove enough of these pieces of content, it will help them out with their ad revenue. And it'll also help the ecosystem we see on the internet. So, and... if everything goes to plan, it should hopefully also set a good example for Facebook and Twitter, I think.
Okay, so all in all, positive. Because it's always, I always find it hard to judge whether these things are positive or negative, but that's because it's such a difficult right. topic.
I think, have a different opinion.
I think it's definitely positive this time from Google.
Okay.
But it's still very vague. It's very vague. Just because they call them extremist or homophobic, what does that mean? Like, you don't know who's going to get monetized and who isn't. And furthermore, this just goes to one of my points, which is support the kind of content that you enjoy watching yourself. Because this dynamic needs to change, where the advertisers run everything. You would not accept that level of censorship from a government. But yet we will accept it with no problem when it comes to the corporate overlords. You need to support each other, support the content that you want to see, because at some point you can't accept this. You just can't.
I feel different, though. I feel like Google is going to get it right in terms of what is acceptable and what isn't.
But they haven't so far. They've given me no reason to believe that whatsoever. I mean, they demonetized, like, mainstream people for reading the news, for talking about the news. They've lost monetization. I don't see how they're going to do it this time.
I think the point with the model where everybody just supports what they believe in doesn't stop the spread of negative, like, topics we would have an issue with in our society.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe, like, it is a valid opinion to say, like, if people want to watch extremist videos, let them watch extremist videos. But it seems that society in general has decided that it's not a good thing. So somebody needs to do something about it. And those people are not going to say, like, this is an extremist video. I'm not supposed to watch it, so I'm not going to. because that's not how that works. So who is going to decide? Like, who is going to push these people away from that content?
See, but that's where I guess that's where I differ, because of course you don't want there to be extremist videos. Like, nobody wants that. But I also feel like that is really easy. We can point to extremist videos and say, well, that's why we have to censor this right here. I mean, hello, it's terrorist. And I'm tired of the boogeyman. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of giving up all kinds of just everything because there's a boogeyman out there. I'm just tired of that. I don't want to be ruled like that anymore.
Oh, I see what you mean. But I don't think there's any evidence out there that says that Google could get this wrong.
But the ad apocalypse took out a lot of just news people that didn't. Yeah. They weren't extremists. I mean, they weren't
and
at all.
In some case, that might have been automated. I'm not entirely sure how it works, but
I mean, they demonetized Phil DeFranco.
I'm not sure who that is.
Shane, this is all done using machine learning. Nobody knows how it works. Not even the people who wrote it.
So, in that case, should we be trusting it then? I don't know if you've done anything with machine learning. I haven't.
No,
but
I haven't myself. But it's magic, and
it's magic. I think,
no, it is actual magic. It's actual magic. I mean, come on, it is. You just give like a computer thing, like, hey, this is a board game called Go. You have to win. Go. And it does it. Like, that's, I mean, it's not as straightforward, but, and I think we're getting to this point where in technology in general, like, self-driving cars, same thing, right? Like, to what point can we trust computers to do the job? And are we okay with that?
A lot better than a 16-year-old chick on her cell phone. I'll take the car.
I mean, yeah, but the question is, like, somebody has to censor the extremist videos, right? Do we trust some person in the office who has definitely some sort of culture and a background and all that stuff?
Everyone has bias. And that's where I come from. I trust the computer more than I trust the person.
Why do we allow computers to go on the road and drive a car and not to censor our internet? Which sounds, I mean, censors.
I got a better question for you. Why do people get on big, you know, pressurized tin cans, fly across the Atlantic and let the computers fly that, right?
Oh, gosh. Don't remind me. I won't think about that. Yeah, no, I know.
It's a very uncommon perception that there's very little difference between flying at 38,000 feet across the Atlantic than being up in the International Space Station in terms of air pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I've been to space then.
Almost, but
You know. See, but I think you know, sometimes we have to ask ourselves, because they're using the example of extremist videos.
What's next?
What's next? But also, so censorship is the answer? No, I don't believe that. Should they not be on there? Yeah, I mean, no one wants to see them, but that is not how you win that kind of a fight. That's not how you win that kind of an argument. You win that with better ideas. You win that with a competing ideology, not censorship.
But there's so many videos, you can't do that. There's so much content on YouTube, you can't do that.
I don't know. I guess I'm just, I don't know. I've never been much for any kind of censorship whatsoever.
Oh, I'm
whether
not
it's
either,
machine but or man. I mean, I just, I think that when you're right, you're right. I mean, defend your arguments and your ideas, and we are right. They are wrong. This shouldn't
you
be hard to
whole,
do.
You get the whole echo chamber effect, though, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm I agree. Like, ideally, everybody gets to know all the perspectives, and everybody chooses the best perspective, if there is such a thing. Are we in that world? I'm not yet, at least. Will it ever be that way? Can't predict that. But I think what you're saying, though, it's like maybe these things are good, even if they're temporary solutions. But I think it's always important to remain skeptical about this and say, okay, you're going to censor stuff. Let's make sure that we do it only to make things better for everybody and not to just move one person's or one party's agenda forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the real clincher going forward on this. And if Google can do that, that'll be great. And like I said, I think the core of the story comes down to Google's viability for advertising in the future. So.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to move us on to our next tech news story. Rocket League, which is a game developed by Psyonix, is going to be the test drive for NBC's esports foray. So NBC Universal is already doing some testing with mobile games and whatnot, and now it's going to host its first esports tournament on Rocket League. NBC Sports will broadcast the tournament across all 8 of its regional networks, such as Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area and Comcast Sportsnet New York, as well as in Europe and Telemundo Deportes, NBC's Spanish-language sports channel. So it's looking like this could be the first esports competition broadcast on live TV. And the reason they're interested in this is because, according to a market analyst, the esports industry is projected to reach $696 million worth this year, with a 41% year-on-year growth. And, of course, anyone who knows Rocket League will know that it is one of the most popular games played online. It's got over 25 million users, and they're already heading into their second year anniversary with new content every so often. So this begs the question, is esports about to become mainstream with Rocket League?
No, but I think it would be awesome.
By the way, just a bit of an informal pick of the week here. Rocket League is a very fun game, and the Steam Summer Sale is going on, so it might be a good time to pick that up if you haven't already.
Steam Sale.
They're going to be doing two-on-two tournaments with this, and there's going to be online qualifiers on July 22nd, divided into regions that correspond with the 8 NBC Sports regional networks. Then the next phase will be on-site regional finals, which will be live-streamed via NBC Sports and the Telemundo app. And this will happen on two weekends, August 5th and 6th, and August 12th and 13th, with live TV coverage for the final hour. So it's not going to be all on TV, but just the final hour will be broadcast on TV at that time. So
I think this is pretty cool because, like, the only thing I can sort of compare with this, which is not esports, is like poker. That's also a thing that you would see on. Yeah.
But is poker a sport, really?
No, well, but is gaming a sport?
Very good question.
Well, what I think is so funny about this is the old person that is trying to talk hip to the kids. What are the kids into? Oh, they like video games? Oh, let's put some of them on TV. Who watches TV? It's not the kids. Because they're streaming.
Yeah, these kind of things already happen on Twitch and Mixer and whatnot.
Yes, like
that is
7-year-old guy's gonna watch Rocket League? No, it ain't gonna happen. He might watch poker. He ain't watching Rocket League.
That's a very good point. I think like TV, especially live TV, is I'm gonna say it, it's dying. Right, I hardly watch live TV anymore. It's all streaming.
Reality TV is the last bastion of live TV, right?
Yeah.
Who watches reality TV?
Not me, but I know people that do.
You know, that's coming up. It's fun. see crazy people in a house.
Oh, that would be something. A Clan Quest version of Big Brother.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Isn't RuneFest going to be just that?
Well, you guys aren't going to be living in the same house for 3 months, and you're not going to have cameras pointed at you.
Oh, gosh. That sounds like a nightmare. Anyway, I think that's a good point. Like, does esports have a place on live TV? I don't think so, to be honest. I think... I'm not entirely sure if there's, like, an audience on TV.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this goes. And, I mean, it's 1 hour. And the question that's going to be interesting to look at, is it going to be esports commentators? Or is it going to be NBC sports commentators who are doing this?
That would be so great! Oh, my God! That would be... I would watch... Just for that. Just for that. Oh, that would be great.
The final prize pool is $100,000.
Wow. If that happens, is John Madden still around? Could we bring him back for a commentate Rocket League?
Well, you guys probably hit the nail on the head that this is an attempt by NBC to maintain viability in the modern world for sports. But, I mean, I guess it could be, but I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes, and I might have to find a channel that's on if they end up broadcasting that in Canada, or even just watch the live stream of it.
Exactly.
What'll be next? Call of Duty? Call of Duty on NBC?
Yeah. See, and the funny thing is NBC, I could see this on, like, Sci-Fi or something. Like, G4. TNT or something. Spike, you know, something like that, but not NBC. That's kind of crazy.
It really is. All right. Well, we've had our laugh for the day, and we've had our question about censorship for the day, so let's move on to something that is indeed factual here, and that this week, on June 20th, NASA has announced that it's discovered 10 new rocky planets that could be potentially like Earth, and they all have significant implications in the search for life based on the fact that they're rocky. This was within a pool of 219 suspected new planets that are outside the solar system, and only 10 of them were rocky and could potentially be in the habitable zone of their star, which of course means that it's at the appropriate temperature where water could exist as liquid and not be ice or not be too hot and fry everything. And as everyone knows, water is a key ingredient of life. So once again, very interesting data coming out of the Kepler Space Telescope. And we're going to be seeing a lot more of that in a couple of years once the James Webb Telescope launches. So interesting times ahead for planetary exploration, even if we're just doing it from telescopes.
Yeah, definitely. I think Stephen Hawking this week also gave a talk where he had very, very, well, not very, very concrete, but like fairly concrete ideas about a interstellar spacecraft that's really tiny, like a couple of centimeters or inches, that's your thing, surrounded by like a huge sail that would then be accelerated by shooting lasers at it.
Okay.
Which sounds weird, but like it works, definitely works, which would accelerate the ship to like a fifth of the speed of light, which could arrive at Alpha Centauri, the
about
system.
20 years,
and then 5 years or so for the signal to come back, which is,
yeah,
I don't know. That you have to add that, but that's pretty exciting because that's not two. That's only 2.5 decades away, right?
Yeah, and I mean
the technique is there, the technology. So It's becoming more and more concrete. This idea has been going around, but I'm pretty sure we'll see a launch of a vehicle like this at some point in the next decade or so, hopefully.
Yeah, and you know, it was even in the early 1990s, it was said that at the current technology and the current pace that existed at the time, it would take around 20 years to get to Pluto under conventional engines. And, you know, the probe was launched in 2009 and it got there in 2016. So it only took eight years to get to Pluto. So
this ship would only take a week to overtake Voyager.
Wow.
Wow.
And Voyager launched in 70-something, I believe. Four?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Just saying. So that's pretty cool. Also, because it would take pictures of the planet, but because it's flying at relativistic speeds, we would see a really weird effect in the picture.
Right.
That would be the first. That would be the first time that that is observed. So,
right. And so basically what this means is that at 0.2C, 1/5 the speed of light, you would start to experience what is Einstein's theory of relativity, where time starts to slow down for you. And that is what you would also see along with that would be the warping of space. And that is what you're referring to would be the very weird photographic effect.
Yeah, I think it's like a Doppler something, like some weird skewing. It's really, really weird. So, yeah. Things are becoming real.
If you're warping space like that, aren't you time traveling?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Yeah. They made a time machine, guys!
Well, yeah, because as you go get closer to the speed of light, time slows down. So anything that was on that ship would not experience the 20 years it would take. It would feel like less time. Whereas to our outside, it would look like 20 years.
That is so cool.
It's quite, yeah.
We need more of space exploration. It's just so amazing. We learn so much from it. I love these stories. They're my absolute favorite stories.
I will try and include more of them in the show. Yeah, so thank you, Sirion, for that. I didn't think about that. And that's a very interesting thing to think about, that you could try and take a photo of what you see, but it would likely need to be adjusted because it wouldn't be looking at all that interesting after that. So.
Yep.
All right. So, well, we've talked about game design. We've talked about soul alters, and we've talked about the Fight Club, and we talked about censorship. We've talked about esports, and now we talked about time travel. I don't think you could get a more complete RSBNB update than that. So,
I don't think so.
We'll just talk about the Skill of the Month update right now, and we got relatively the same thing happening that we had last week, except this week we have the Lion still in first place with 14.9 million XP gained. Second place is yourself, Tanis, with 13.2. And Parnassius has taken third place with 6.4 million XP, while Thieves remains flatlined at 5.4. I happen to know that Thieves is on vacation, so that is why you guys all passed him.
Okay.
Yes. And we do have some achievements of the week, so I'll just run through these quickly. We have Hemsky, who got 99 strength on the 21st. Moving on to the 19th, we have a lot of them. Oh boy, this is a really involved name. XOX, Scotty XOX, with 120 attack on the 19th. Packrat 4 with 99 runecrafting and divination. Wolf Knight 93 with 120 invention. And the Lion 777 with 120 Slayer. I'm not sure why that's in there twice. We'll remove that. I thought I fixed that bug. Next, Sicarium with 99 Magic on the 17th. Torugrai with 99 Smithing on the 16th. Continuing on the 16th, Wily with 99 Fishing. And Cool Banksy with 99 Strength.
Well done, everyone.
Very good. Congratulations to everyone.
Indeed. What do you got for a pick of the week this week, Tanis? I believe you said you had one for us.
I do. It's the Steam Summer Sale. So get out your wallets and make some purchases.
What are you looking at?
Oh, man. I'm looking at everything. yeah. What aren't I looking at? I think with Shane's recommendation, I am going to pick up Rocket League if that's on sale. And I was a little disappointed. There's a few games I wanted to be on sale that aren't, but that's okay. I'll make up for it. I'm definitely picking up the Epic Battle Simulator because that just looks like stupid fun. And I don't know. I have a pretty
Rocket League is on sale for 40% off.
Oh, yes. This is my favorite time of the year. I get into the Steam sale, man. Yeah, I might pick up some DLC, finish off The Witcher. I know it's an older game now, but I don't have the DLC for that, so I'm going to probably pick up that. And I was thinking about getting GTA 5 because I don't have it yet, and it's always full price. Like, as old as it is now, it's full price. You wouldn't?
No.
Okay.
You know, that game had so much promise, and they promised a huge multiplayer online element to it, and to my understanding, that has effectively been shut down. So,
well, the
you might be better done. Off trying Watch Dogs 2. I've heard good
Watch Dogs.
About that.
Okay, yeah. Okay. That's cool. Yeah, so, I mean...
Do you have time to play all these games? So I have a backlog in my library. Like, half the games in my Steam library have never even started.
I have a few games from the Winter Sale that I haven't played yet. you know,
this
it's kind of like
want.
I know, but it's I'm kind of like, okay, you know how girls are with shoes? That's kind of like me with games. I really want a game to go with every occasion, you know.
Another thing I can recommend, let me see if it's on sale here, in addition to Rocket League, is let's see, Golf with Your Friends. That's 30% off. That's just
yes,
a stupid game.
On my wish list. I wanted to get that because I saw there was a channel for that. Golf with Assholes. Is that Friends?
That's
the same, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Okay. I didn't see that. I was like, ooh, I want that game. Sounds like fun.
Yeah. The only thing I might look at is Kerbal Space Program. I haven't got that yet.
I mean, I can recommend that. 122 hours, I think I'm at. So.
Oh, wow. That's one I bought at the winter sale, and I haven't played it yet.
No.
I got it, though.
Well done. Yeah, no. I think there's DLC coming for that as well in a couple of months.
Very cool. Well, I can tell you, as much fun as I have had, I will never do another month-long competition because I am fried. And I want to play everything, and I can't. It's driving me insane.
Oh, are you referring to Skill of the Month?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I love it, but boy, it's a long one. I've never competed this long. I've always done, you know, weeklies and stuff like that. So this was, you know, then the Steam sale hits today and I'm like, oh man, you know, and I picked up like Tekken 7 2 weeks ago and I've only played it like three times and it's, I'm like shaking, you know, at nighttime. I'm like, no, I gotta slay. I have to.
How about you, Sirion? You have any summer sale recommendations, things people should look at for Steam or games?
That's a tough one. Recommend Kerbal Space Program. If you're into it, if you have lots of time to kill, I can recommend Stellaris, which is it's a 4X game. It's like grand strategy in space. It's actually pretty cool. There's like the graphics are amazing. There's a lot of depth in the game. It's also super, super complicated and super difficult. So you have to sort of prepare for that. Because
I like the soundtrack with that one.
It has a great soundtrack. It's absolutely beautiful. But I had a lot of fun with it. I'm not winning yet, but it has so much backstory inside the game. And you can sort of make your own story, right? Because you play your own race and like expand Interstellar, that kind of stuff. So I had a lot of fun with that, just faffing about with my elitist human race that things like all the other races are like worse. It's a lot of fun just doing that kind of stuff. Like in every game is different, so that's what I recommend. But you have to really be prepared to spend a lot of hours on that.
Alrighty then. So what have we been up to on RS? You can go first, Sirion.
Something reputation grinding.
Okay.
Pretty much that. I haven't done any. I haven't really had the time nor the motivation to do anything else in the game. I got bubbles though.
Oh, that's nice.
All right.
Congrats. 107 fishing. Finally got bubbles.
Nice.
So that's cool. Not my favorite pet, but I was sort of waiting for it after all the fishing. I was so getting into the grinding of the reputation I didn't even notice. That's not true. I was AFK. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. How about you, Tanis?
Slayer.
Of course.
Yeah. Nothing but that. And I've been fishing in Menafoss with Junior, but while I slay, but that's been about it. Yeah.
All right. As for me this week, capped off the reputation on Sunday, I believe, did the quest on Wednesday. And in between then, I did a Slayer task of Abyssal Demons. And this is where the second funny story of the podcast comes from. You know, this was a very interesting experience because I went to the Curadel's dungeon and I have long preferred dual wielding over two-handed weapons. It's just my style. And, you know, we don't really have many options for AoE dual wielding except for the ability that came from Shattered Worlds, which I haven't got yet. And, oh my god, this task of 216 Abyssal Demons was just like watching paint dry. It was almost to the point of, well, it was to the point of making me nod off. So, and, I mean, it wasn't as though I was exceptionally tired or anything. It just felt like that. So, I think it's safe to say at this point that Slayer's probably not for me.
I did so much. I did most of my Slayer and combat training on Abbey Demons.
Okay.
So, yeah,
and you
I
can
don't
assign
how,
them. And you know what I did that made it different for the second half of the task? Is I went to the roof of the Canifus Slayer Tower. Mm-hmm. I got a two-handed weapon, and I just used as much AoE as I could.
Yes, you need that. Did you have your aggro pots going?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, there you go.
I just die too much when I do that. So I go with the old-fashioned one by one. And then one of these 138 combat people comes up and starts scolding at you for, like, doing it the wrong way.
I hate that. You know what? You do what you do. I'll do what I do, okay? Like,
yeah.
I was
doing this on the roof, and somebody came up and was like, if you're on the roof, you have to do the magic thing where you aggro everything. I'm like, who says that? Like, where does it say so?
I missed that in the handbook. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
This is what our own custom Slayer dungeons are for now.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. Yes,
well,
I have Abby
to come in, and they're gonna do like the magic thing. I'm gonna be like, no, you have to do enemies one by one in my dungeon.
Well, I have Abby, so you guys can come in and do whatever.
I thought you couldn't invite a friend to it. No.
Yeah.
You can. Okay.
Yeah, oh wow, that's really cool. So you can do like co-op slave in your personal dungeon if you want to.
No, I haven't tried that, but I wouldn't see why not.
That's fun.
And
well,
you do need 99 Slayer
as
to unlock the door.
I tested that
this week to see if I could get into someone else's dungeon without 99, and you cannot. So
yeah,
I'm like 102, so.
Oh, right on.
I might look in.
Yeah. See? Menafoss is looking up, isn't it, Sirion?
It's all about the Slayer.
I mean, it's still Slayer, so it's like down there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alrighty, well, thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you, Sirion and Tanis, for being here this week.
Thanks for having me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Bistro will be back next week, and we will hopefully be discussing the Magister, whatever that might be, and any of its lore drops. So until then, thank you for listening and sharing your time with us. See you next week.
See ya.
See you later.